Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the 28th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
And we are excited today to have Amy with us, who works full-time in Huntsville ISD as the Director of Staff Development and District Initiatives. She is also a Google Certified Trainer and a Google Certified Teacher. So thanks, Amy, for coming with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yes, and you can find Amy on Twitter. You want to go ahead and give us your Twitter handle?
Yeah, it's Fried Technology.
I love your Twitter handle. I always have.
Yeah, you do.
There's a mad tech in the middle. I don't know if you ever noticed that, but I did. Several years after I had it. Yeah.
And for those of you listening on the podcast in your cars or whatever, you probably can't see what Amy, her venue is tonight, but she's got a nice lit Christmas tree behind her, looking very festive in her headphones and her decorated house, and looks great.
Thanks.
We look like the Scrooges with nothing behind us.
Mine's in the other room, so.
Well, let's go ahead and get started. Amy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in education?
Well, gosh, so many people have stories like mine, I think, but I did okay in school, but I didn't really like it. I had a lot of kind of negative school experiences, and when I started going to college, I really started to enjoy school, and I got a chance to be a graduate assistant, and I liked it. You know, I really liked that teaching venue, and when technology came along and became a part of education, I was able to start helping the professors as a graduate student to use technology. So at first it was like I was helping them learn to check their email. So I was at Sam Houston State University when email came about for the first time, and I worked with the English and foreign language professors, and I taught them to use email and taught them to do things like put grades into their grade book. And so, you know, it was just kind of a natural progression for me to go into teaching from there, and I always tried to do it in a different way, and the way that I wish that I had it done unto me, you know, and that's how I do staff development too, how I would like to have it done unto me. So it's kind of, I'm a golden rule educator, I guess. So yeah, I started teaching and using technology in the classroom, and then went into instructional technology, and now I'm a director of staff development.
So you actually work with the district now, correct?
Mm-hmm, I do. And I also do a lot of consulting work, but yeah, I do work full-time for a public school district.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's what I thought. So a lot of you know, a lot of us know you as the Google Queen. So when did you decide to become the Google Certified Trainer and Teacher? And, you know, how did that path look? What did that path look like?
Well, the first step in my Googliness journey happened when my boss came in. I think it was after Christmas break one year. It was years ago. I mean, online, it's free. I signed us up for it. Here's the login. Get in there and see what it does. And it was Google Apps for Education, way back. And I started playing around with it. And I'm like, you know, Scott, this is amazing. This is really cool. I can't believe this is free. And I started telling people about it. And then he sent me the application to be a Google Certified Teacher, which now is a really big deal. It's very difficult to become a Google Certified Teacher. The numbers aren't released about how many applications there are per academy, but there are many. There are many wonderful people who are turned down for each academy. And so was really lucky to get in on an early academy. I'm sure it was not anywhere near as competitive back then in 2010, but I got to go to Google Teacher Academy, and of course that really kind of got me fired up. And then later on, the Certified Trainer Program came out, and I got involved in that, and I've gotten to do a lot of work with Google, and you know, with now we're working on the Texas Google Summit already. That's coming up in May, and I just believe in the product. It's really fantastic. There isn't anything else like it. Nothing else that does what that product does. So when the next big thing comes along, I might be in love with that too. But right now, there's nothing as comprehensive and successful for work as Google at this time, in my opinion.
So let me just kind of follow up on that. Like, what do you think? How has your career benefited, I guess, from, you know, being a Google certified trainer? What do you think the biggest benefit is?
Yeah, well, I think that, and a lot of people ask that question, especially teachers will say, I want to become a Google certified trainer, a Google certified teacher. And they usually don't, that doesn't mean what they think it means. So being a certified trainer gives you a benefit if you're going to go into your own school district or someone else's school district and actually teach people to use the tools, because it's some built-in credibility that you take with you on a piece of paper. Of course, nothing's going to save you if you don't know what you're talking about, but it gives you a chance, you know, to get your foot in the door and have some built-in credibility. But for teachers who are using Google in the classroom, it's really, it doesn't make sense really to get that certification unless you really want to go out and train other people. It really is for people who want to implement and train Google. The first thing that you should do if you want to travel along that path is really learn the tools. So start to talk to people about the tools, learn everything you can about them, you know, really use them, make yourself. Sometimes, you know, if you're using Microsoft Office right now and you think you want to get into doing work with training Google, then try to figure out, how can I do this using this Google tool? How can I make the same thing work using this tool, so that you'll really learn those things well? And then you can start moving along that path toward getting the certifications if that's where you think you want to go.
And the certification process isn't like, you know, you're just taking some 30-minute test and bam, they send you certification, whatever. It's an intense thing, right? Talk about that, like the how intense it is.
Yeah, it's very intense. So there are 6 tests, and you have 90 minutes. They're timed. And there's no way anyone can know all the information that are on the test, and that's, I don't think, the intent of them. So there's supposed to be a new version coming out in January. So the version I'm talking about right now is what's out there right now. So you really are intensely searching the whole time that you have to take the test. And once you successfully complete and pass those tests, then you're going to be completing a portfolio of your training materials. So what they want to see is, are you actively training people? How many people have you trained? How many people have you helped implement? So they'll ask you questions about domains, Google domains that you've set up. So a lot of, you can kind of see now already that many teachers wouldn't be prepared to answer that question.
Right.
How many other school districts or businesses have you helped implement Google? You know, well, you need to be able to say that you've helped someone do that. You got to go out and find somebody. You may have to do that for free, you know, to get that on your resume and say, okay, I know how to do this now.
They're really looking for advocates for their products. I mean, really.
That's very well put. Yes, you really are. And when you get into that program, you're asked to agree to some things because you're representing that company. Obviously, you're not paid to represent the company, not by Google. It's a very unique program, and I think it's wise how they have it set up. But for example, as a Google certified trainer, you're asked not to say negative comparative things about other products. So hopefully you won't hear a Google-certified trainer, for example, putting up a side-by-side comparison of Office 365, for example, and Google.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is the product speaks for itself, and if another product does something, there's no reason for us not to use it or to, you know, talk about it. It just is. It just speaks for itself.
Yeah. I love that approach.
Yeah, good for them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's part of the don't be evil, and there's just no need for that. It doesn't serve a purpose.
Well, I know you mentioned the Texas Google Summit, and last year was y'all's first year to do it, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So why don't you tell our viewers a little bit more about that and how that came to be?
I'd love to. I'm super pumped about it. We just met on Friday, too, so I'm even more excited than I was before. So we had this idea, you know, there have been some other Google summits that have been going on, and it's a group of women who I am close friends with and work a lot with, and I just thought, you know, we could do this and we could really do it big. And so I asked them all to kind of come on board and share the dream, and they all did, and we had it at a college last year, and I can't even tell you how many hours of work went into it. It was very, very intense, but it was a, did you come, Todd?
Yes, it was wonderful. Yeah, I mean, everybody that went talked about how much they loved it.
Yeah, we were both there. It was amazing.
Oh, that's great. Thank you guys for coming, too. It was a whirlwind day for us. I mean, but we were thrilled with how it came off. We felt like, you know, we had 1,000 things that we want to do different and better this time, but we had 10,000 things that we thought worked. We got great reviews. It just was great. We wanted it to feel like a party. Mm-hmm. We wanted it to be something that people could pay for, even if their district wouldn't send them. Many of us have worked for school districts that wouldn't pay for us to attend staff development, and we want to always keep the price so that any teacher can attend, even if they have to pay themselves. That's really important to us. And we want to provide the best quality, best planned out staff development on Google that you can get inside the state of Texas. And we really think that we could compete nationally. And that's what our Google representative said, is that it's one of the best summits he's ever been to. So we're going to provide that again. It was. He's been to many, many summits. And so I was happy about that. I'm also going to be at the South Carolina summit this summer. So I'm excited. You guys in the nationwide Google event, so I'm excited to see kind of the South, you know, arising in the Google world. But it's going to be in Brenham this year, May 17th is a Saturday. We're going to have a tweet up the night before the 16th, and we have a whole Texas theme going on. Our mascot is the cow from Bluebell, and her name is Cher, you know, like Project Cher. Get it? Yeah.
Got it.
she even has a song which will be coming out hopefully in January. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It's actually pretty great song. So we do have a deal with Bluebell to provide ice cream. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
We got a whole sort of cow Texas theme going on there. So it's gonna be great. And this year we're going to take our attendees' advice, and we're going to provide lunch on site as part of the admission. So it's logistically, that's very difficult. I don't know if you've ever tried to plan anything with that, but it's hard logistically to do that. But we're going to make it happen, and we feel like we've recruited the help we need from local vendors in Brenham to make that happen and to make sure everybody gets fed fast. And the food is good and all that kind of stuff. So,
cool. Well, that's right in Todd's backyard. You're in Brenham,
right?
I'm excited. Yeah. I don't have to drive for a conference.
That's right. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, sure.
As you know, Brenham is such a nice town. I mean, it's, you know, like we go there and spend the weekend. We live, you know, an hour and a half away, and we'll go there and spend the weekend. So we thought, who wouldn't want to come spend the weekend in Brenham?
Yeah, exactly.
And you guys saw we got Kyle Pace coming.
Oh, cool.
Yes, I've read that online. I am so excited to hear him.
Me too. We're flying him in, and he's such a nice guy. He's super knowledgeable, but he's also humble and a really nice person. So I love that about him and that we're going to have him, because he's not from Texas, but he definitely embodies the spirit that we want, you know, for this event.
Yeah, very cool. So you utilize social media quite a bit. When did you decide to get connected, and kind of what did that journey look like?
Well, my students back in the day demanded I get on MySpace. And so that was my first foray. But I thought it was really fun, you know. I thought it was a neat way to connect with them. And luckily, I didn't have any prohibitive policies in place at the time that kept me from doing that, because it really, I kind of saw the connections I could make. And then I had access to WebCT. Remember that? It was taken over by Blackboard, but I was teaching a class at Sam Houston State while I was teaching high school, and I figured out that I could load all my high school kids into their LMS, and so I started using that, the discussion boards with my kids, and I actually got a couple of kids who were seniors who I didn't teach to moderate the boards. And they had fake names because, you know, I'm loading them myself. I could put in whoever I wanted.
Uh-huh.
And so I had these moderators in there. Nobody knew who they were. It kept the kids really intrigued because they couldn't figure out who these guys were. And I had one girl. Her name was Vanessa. And literally her classmates had never heard her speak. I had never heard her speak. Her classmates had never heard her speak. And she was participating so much in class discussions that kids were looking around the room like, who is that? Who is that person, right? Is this another person in our class who's not really in here? And I thought, man, this is powerful. When I can get a kid who literally will not open her mouth in class to be participating to the point that she's making friends she never would have had in a purely face-to-face world, boy, there is power in this. Right. And now what you can do with Twitter and Facebook, and that's why I try to use all the channels, because I don't want to miss somebody who I could be connected with just because they're not on Twitter yet. You know, right. They don't get it yet. That platform is much harder to master, I think, than Facebook. So I try to keep my Facebook up, you know, and dual post and all that kind of stuff, because I end up connecting with people who I just wouldn't meet any other way. And it's just an exciting time to be in education and to be able to be connected to all these people, as you guys know. But for you guys who are watching, if you're not involved in those worlds yet, you know, try to get out there and meet people, because it's an exciting time and an exciting group of people to know and to get involved with.
Well, you mentioned doing a lot of consulting stuff now too, and going and speaking quite a bit. Have you ever had any kind of public speaking fear, or has that always come naturally to you?
Oh, that's a funny question. I'm an introvert, and a lot of people don't believe that or think that's really funny when I say that, but I'm
laughing.
Yeah, I'm totally fine, and most introverts are totally fine talking about what they're expert at, but if we started talking about something I don't know about, I would be just completely quiet and you wouldn't know me at all. But as long as I'm talking about this, I really don't feel any limitations, because this is what I'm passionate about, I love, and it's so easy for me, and I actually think I'm probably a lot more personable and charming in front of a crowd than I am in, you know, a small group. So this is easy for me.
Cool. So you've worked at a region service center before. What's the difference between working with a service center and maybe in the district? Is there a huge difference there? Or?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I may be one of the only people you'll meet who's worked at two different service centers. I worked at Region 4, and okay. I worked at Region 6. And the service center life is not for me. I love what the service centers do. I'm so glad they're there, and many of my good friends work at service centers. But what I found out is that I really like being connected to a school district. It's very difficult. Working at a service center looks deceptively easy. So if you guys have credibility with the people you work with them all the time, they know you, you know, like many people probably see you as a guru in your fields, you know, and that's great. You have this built-in relationship. When you work in a service center, every new district you go into, every new person you encounter, which is constant, you got to build that credibility with them all over again. Mm-hmm. Because they're usually not seeking you out. They're usually... And a lot of that baggage is bad. Service center before, and on that. I see you smiling.
Yeah, I think we lost it. We lost a connection for like 7 seconds probably. Oh. So go through your last like two sentences.
Okay. So sometimes expectations are low for people coming from the service center.
I don't know
if you all have encountered that before.
Yes, yeah, I would say yes.
Yeah, so that was tough for me because, you know,
are you getting the lag too,
school
Todd?
District, you know, people have invited me. Is he laggy or frozen?
He may be frozen, so maybe that's causing the issue. We'll just continue on.
Okay. All right. Well, what I was saying is whenever you go into a school district as a consultant, you want to be invited there and wanted there and not perceived as, you know, either a threat or a bore or an intrusion. And I found that that was really hard for me, you know, yeah. to go in and maybe be seen that way initially. I feel like I was always able to overcome that, but it's hard. The traveling is really hard. I didn't anticipate how difficult that would be,
mm-hmm.
but there he is back again. But it's a very challenging life to be sort of on the road and everything like that all the time.
So you're also part of the EdTech Women of Texas, is that right?
Yes. So
tell us a little bit about that.
So we formed a nonprofit organization, and it's called Techs for Techs, and we're not woman exclusive, although all of our board members right now are women. We do, you know, like we like men and allow you guys to come and talk to us and all that kind of stuff. But you know, you probably noticed there aren't as many women in educational technology just because there aren't as many women in technology, period. So we also have talked some about, you know, issues of being a woman in a mostly male field. And I just read Lean In, and I highly recommend that you guys read it too. I think that I kind of think all of us in our age and generation right now should probably read this book.
Let's say it again, the title.
It's called Lean In. It's Sheryl Sandberg. It's but it's really enlightening. Like, I guess I kind of thought the same thing she says she did in the book, that this whole struggle for women is over. And she really shows you that it's actually not. We still have a long way to go. And she shows and men sometimes how they might inadvertently, by not understanding the differences in how we think. But what it showed me too is the differences in how men think. So, for example, a school district recently that I was waiting to get paid by, and I would probably literally have waited within 2 weeks. I probably would have waited a month. And then I thought, what would a man do? A man would not wait to be paid a month. A man would call the day after that he was supposed to be paid and say, I didn't get the check. I don't know if you realize, yesterday was the date and I'm waiting. And so I did, and they were so apologetic, they immediately sent it. I mean, I thought, why do I act like this, you know? I don't have to act like this. Right. It's not acting like a man. It's being assertive and asking for what you need, and that only makes sense. Mm-hmm. But we often hold ourselves back from doing that. So it definitely made me, and I don't think anyone thinks of me as not assertive. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes I don't do what's my first inclination, and that book was powerful for me.
You know, we see the same thing in science as well, and I'm just like all over my little girls in science, like, you can do this. You can go be a computer scientist and code computers and just make boatloads of money. You just, yeah. No one's ever told you can, but you can. It's there for you. And actually, there may be more money for you to do it. So get out there and get your
Well, you know, it's funny. I was listening to an episode of Techlandia last week, and Wendy Sanders, Kenya 75, was talking about how she started a group at her school called Little EdTech Women, which is an after-school thing that she has just for girls. And she said, heard the story, and I may get this a little bit wrong, but the story was she had went to observe another school, and all the kids in this computer class were boys. And she said, you know, where are the girls? Why aren't they taking these classes? And so she said, you know, on this elementary campus, I want to start this after-school program called Little EdTech Women and just have it just for the girls and help them get excited about coding and doing this and doing that so that they can see that this is a field you can go into as well.
That is such a cool idea. I love that. I love that idea.
I have this little girl in my class. She's probably like one of the highest level kids I have, and I was just asking her. She wanted to eat lunch with me the other day. So I said, yeah, fine, stick back, and you know, you can eat lunch in here. And I was like, so what do you want to do with your life? You know, and she starts talking about she wants to be a marine biologist. I'm like, you really want to be a marine biologist? Do you want to go count bacteria on the beach? You know, do you really want to do that? And she's like, well, not really, but I've always been told that, you know, I could work with dolphins. I'm like, no. So I like totally erased that from her memory. I'm like, you're not going to be a marine biologist. Here's what you're going to do. And I start talking to her about computer science and computer programming, and she's like so gung-ho about it. I'm like, you can just own this whole area for sure. And she, so she's all super excited about it. She comes up and talks to me all about it now. So I'm like, sweet.
That's great. Forget being a doctor or a lawyer.
That's right.
Well, I mean, honestly, you know, if you look at the data says you're way better off working to be a computer programmer than you are a doctor or a lawyer.
Yeah, no question.
I mean, that's the truth. Yeah. You know, it's just, like you said, it's just you don't know you want to be that because you've never heard of it before.
That's exactly right. These kids don't know what a computer scientist does. And that's
right.
And that's only one aspect. But, you know, these jobs that, you know, that are going to exist for our kids when they graduate, you know, I teach 8th grade, he teaches 5th grade. The jobs don't exist yet that these kids are going to have, and so it's very hard for them to understand, you know, what they want to do, especially if they don't even exist. So.
Well, how about this one? How about if you are participating in UIL academic subjects, and you do things like dictionary skills?
Right.
I was at the competition this last weekend, and we have dictionary skills. How long's it been since you used a dictionary?
Oh, exactly. It's just.
Yeah.
You just hover and wait for the definition to pop up. My skill. I've conquered dictionary skills. But there was nothing, there's no coding, there's no programming, there's no power searching. I mean, what's wrong with the UIL?
Yeah.
Do you think you could get somebody from the UIL to watch this?
Yeah, power searching, that'd be a great, that would be an awesome event. That would be a really cool
event. You know, and UIL's never even an area that I've even thought about not updating.
Yeah.
It's
map reading, dictionary skills.
Yeah.
I coached art appreciation, which I can get with that. But yeah, some of these other ones are
that also called picture memory?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Have you used Google Image Search lately? Because you don't actually have to remember the name of the picture. You can look it up.
That is
true. Yeah. Yeah, that just blew me away when I started thinking about that. Whoa, it's time to update.
I know. I've never even considered that, and that's just crazy to me to even think about that we're putting our kids through this stuff. You're so right.
Totally useless skills. I mean, you know, I'm super happy for the kids who won because hard work is all. How to do if you're
going to
work hard, right?
Yeah, I know.
Right.
I'm going to demand that I'm no longer taking my $300 stipend to teach UIL until they change it to
You get a stipend? I don't get a stipend.
Hey, it's $300. It hardly buys Christmas gifts, you know?
Oh, wow.
I want to put on your Christmas list.
Amy, if you could go back 5 or 10 years and give yourself a piece of advice, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, gosh. I think I would tell myself that it's a bigger world than you think, that you shouldn't hold yourself back because you're afraid. Like, going to all these different school districts, and that's a gift that the Region Center gave me, is that people in our field, they all need to know the same kind of things, and they all would appreciate the help. So you don't have to just, you know, there's that old adage or statement or whatever to bloom where you're planted, but you really don't have to just stay where you are. It's really nice to kind of get out there in the world and work with a wider audience, I think. And I guess that there were probably 5 years ago, I didn't realize that. And I feel a great sense of freedom now at having, you know, having been in a lot of different school districts and a lot of different places and worked with such a wide variety of people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a phrase that I remember you saying, and I don't know if you came up with it or not, but I love the phrase, and Chris and I have quoted it several times on here before, but it's the phrase of, you will never be a prophet in your own land.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that one, too. I think that actually is from the Bible.
Yeah, it's Old Testament. I found that out after I had asked you about it.
Yeah.
It's an Old Testament phrase.
But it isn't that so true? I mean, you know, like, that was so funny to hear. And to be interviewed by you guys, it's such an honor, you know, because when I go to work every day, people are like, oh, that's just Amy. You know, and then I work with an awesome technology director, Tracy, and she me and said, oh, we're so glad you're here. And she's like, do they think you're kind of a big deal or something? And I'm like, yeah, Tracy, people other places actually appreciate me, you know? And so it's nice to get out. That's the key to this. It's nice to get out because wherever you work, you're just Todd, you're just Chris, you're just Amy, mm-hmm. you're just, you know, like, you're never going to, you know, it's just like, it has to be like that. And that's good. Right. That keeps you humble.
Right.
When you go somewhere else and people are nice to you, you're like, yeah, this is nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
So this is kind of the question that always kind of trips up guests if you haven't seen it before. But has there ever been a time in your career when you've fallen on your face or you kind of made a mistake that you really had to learn from it?
That is a tough one. Definitely. The first time I went to a region center, that was a mistake for me. It was not a good fit for me. And when I came back into public education, I I don't know, you know, like how can you ever say? Because every step you took led you to where you are today.
Sure.
But I'd say finding a job that is a good fit for you and understanding when you go to an interview, they're not just interviewing you. You need to be interviewing them because mm-hmm. It has to be a mutual thing. And what I learned from the mistake of going to that first region center I worked at was that this is not just about getting somebody else to hire me. I'm accepting them and they're accepting me and it's a mutual thing. So when I went to the interview for the job I have now, I just thought I didn't just like my job at Region 6. I could have worked there for another 10 years. It was, you know, there was nothing about it I was running away from. I just wanted to be a part of a district again. But I just thought, I'm going to lay it all on the table. I'm really going to be myself. I'm going to say the kinds of stuff I say that some people might not like or agree with. And I remember in the interview, and I've said this to people since then, do you remember when I interviewed, I told you, if you don't really want to change, say they want to change and they want to talk about that and all that kind of stuff, but they don't really want to do it. So if you don't want to do it, I'm not your person and don't pick me. And that's going to be okay for both of us. And they, I heard later, my name was the only name that they sent on to the superintendent. He had asked for two or three names. And so, you know, I thought these guys really want to do what they say they want to do. And so this is where I need to be. And I think if I had not really laid it on the table, really been myself, it may have taken us much longer to come to that understanding. So I think just really being honest about what you have to offer, what you expect from them, what that position is going to be like, what you want to do was the lesson that I learned from the mistake of going to a place where it just wasn't a good fit for me. I didn't want what they wanted.
I think that's great advice.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
lay it out there.
Yeah, it's good original advice that, you know, I'm still early in my career, and that's something that I'll think back on because, you know, ultimately I'm going to move on to somewhere. I don't see myself being a science teacher for, you know, the next 25 years or anything, but yeah, I need to interview these other places, these other districts or other positions within the district or whatever and find out if, hey, this is who I am, and you can go out and look at this is what I do, and if you can't approve of that or agree with some of these things and allow me to go out there and fail, then probably not a good fit, you know?
Otherwise, you have the potential to just end up in a miserable position.
Yeah.
Yes, and that is what will happen if it's not a good fit, and it won't, I guarantee you, this is another thing that I've learned that's so valuable to me now, it won't matter what the money is. You always think, you know, if I could just make this much more money or whatever, then I could put up with fill in the blank, whatever
right.
that is. I promise you, after having tried it, it will not work. There's no amount of money that can make up for being in a position that is not a good fit for you.
Sure.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, I've been there where I thought it would, but it's never panned out. It has to be the right fit. And then the money will come to you when you're doing what you are supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Amy, what advice would you have for a teacher just getting started in their career?
Well, you know, along those same lines, really be reflective about whether that is the right career for you. I work with new teachers in my own district, and you know, sometimes I'm not their supervisor, so I don't have these conversations. Like, I really like teenagers. I mean, I'm just one of those weird people. And I don't like middle school kids. I like high school kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss them. I miss that age. I like their weirdness. I love that age. They're just entertaining. I don't feel like that about kids. If you've taught even this long, let's say you started in August and you've taught until now it's December 16th, you have enough experience to know whether this is maybe not the right place for you. Because if you don't think about your kids over the holidays and go, "God, those little jerks are so cool," or "I miss them," or whatever, then it's probably not right for you. So just make sure you're in the right career, because it doesn't mean you're a bad person or you're a bad employee or anything else. It just might mean this is not the right fit for you. And if it's not, none of us wants to help usher you out. You know, it's much better for you to be reflective and figure that out on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff. So the last thing we usually end up with is, what are you really passionate about right now in education?
Well, I mean, I stay really fired up about reform. I have two kids. I have a 17-year-old who's a senior in high school who's about to graduate, and then this guy who's walking up right here who's 12 and is in sixth grade. And so, you know, I see that he has some really great teachers, by the way. Before I slam somebody, I want to say that he has some really great teachers. But you know, using technology, having technology integrated in his education would make a big difference for him, and he doesn't really have much of that. I love it when he has teachers who are connected, you know, who care about him. That's the number one thing. But number two would be having some 21st century relevance in his instruction, and I want that not just for my kids. I want that for every kid who's educated anywhere, really, for there to be that underlying relevance in the work that they do. So I stay really fired up about that. And I love Google tools like we talked about before, but it really is just the experience of using a technology in your education is an added value to everything that you do. And I feel like we're just doing our kids a disservice every day them an educated value when there are kids out there who are getting an education with an added value every day. And so it's just it's really important. I feel like it's important for our career, for the future of public education, for us to be doing that, because we have competition now. I don't know if you guys heard, but Huntsville ISD actually has a public online school now.
Really? I have not heard that, no.
Yeah, so we formed a partnership with a company, and we're the only public school that has that partnership right now. And when you see those commercials on TV, we're trying to recruit your students. So everybody should think about that. You know, it's not that anybody who I work with would say that an online education with no face-to-face time would be the very best that we could ask for anybody's student, but there are lots of situations where it works, where it's the parent's choice, and it, you know, we're not here in Texas, we don't get to make that decision. You know, homeschool is a valid choice in our state, and we certainly, you know, most of us couldn't advocate that for our own kids, because I couldn't teach all of the subjects that even my sixth grader has right now in school. Mm-hmm. But these are choices that everybody has to make, and so for our career, for our kids, for public education, it's providing that underlying added value work that comes through technology use ubiquitous throughout your education.
Well, Amy, we wanted to thank you so much for coming on with us today. We really appreciate you giving us some time and letting us ask you some questions and learn a little bit more about you. Do you want to go ahead and share where people can find you and your website and all that kind of stuff?
Sure, that'd be great. And thank you guys so much for having me. That was a lot of fun.
Great, no problem.
So on Twitter, I'm at Fried Technology. So fried, just like, you know, everything is better fried. And my website is friedtechnology.com. And I'm on Facebook. It's facebook.com/friedtechnology. And Google Plus, you know, on Google Plus, it's a little different. There are short URLs that you can use, but it's the easiest way to do that on Google Plus is just to search. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to connect with anybody out there watching, and thanks to you guys for having me on. That was more fun than I thought it would be, I have to say.
Well, we want to thank the listeners for sticking with us as well, and definitely check out Amy and connect with her. And remember that you can connect with EduAllStars on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ and follow along with the hashtag EduAllStars, as well as our website, EduAllStars.com, where you can check out the other 27 episodes that we have, in addition to where you can listen to them on iTunes if you want by searching EduAllStars with no spaces.
And then this Wednesday, December 18th at 8 o'clock, we're going to have librarian Shannon Miller on. It's kind of a two for this week so we can get some downtime the rest of the year and kind of just get some rest. We've done one of these every week since this summer, and it's time for us to take a little break and unplug, I think, for a little bit and get back to ready to go in 2014. Just encourage you to subscribe if you made it this far. You can subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, feedback. It really helps us out. Appreciate it. Thanks, everyone.